Thanks, Trish. Yeah. Thank you. He has confirmed that he's got a great view of right here, and he's able to have a good. Well, you know what? I don't know where the hell I'm going to sit. I'll figure it out. Maybe I'll join your ass. Okay.
Hold it down, wheelchair.
Huh? Okay. Let's see here. I haven't really thought much about this. I just want to say that, you know, yeah, Jack and I celebrate our birthdays together every year. Yesterday he called me and said happy birthday and all that good, you know, it's an annual thing for us. And it's a deal. You know, it's just what we deal. We're always playing with each other. And so this morning I called him up and I said, yeah, man, happy birthday, man. So you got 20 years. It's like, I just was reminiscing and thinking about when you called me when I got my 20 years. And he said, it seems like it was just yesterday. I've had the honor of knowing them, doing this walk with Jack. And if you're new and you're struggling and you're feeling like shit and you are lost and you're confused and you're scared, no matter any of us with any length of time, we're in the same place, you know. And so we just walk and we do our best not to pick up and we try to get involved with this thing. This has been an absolute blessing and a gift. I have played sober softball with Jack in the years past. We've done some frisbee golf together and we've done plenty of other events. We've experienced the same old timers that were just absolutely instrumental in our recovery that have come and gone. We've suffered the loss of them, and we've seen literally probably thousands of people come and go from here, come and go. And for those, the two of us that came in at the same time, we are the only two that are regular meeting makers. I can tell you that much right now. We are the only two in the time frame of when we came in that make meetings regularly. And there's a few others that are still sober, I know that, but I think... But in spite of that, this is something that you don't want to miss, man. If you're new, you know, if you're like, there's no way. Yeah, there is. It's a day at a time. So I've been really looking forward to this. It is his birthday today, celebrating his 20 years. It's a special day, man. It's February 20th, and 20 years of sobriety for Jack. I'm really looking forward to hearing him. He's got a heck of a story, and yeah, he was pretty rowdy when he was out there. So here we go. Welcome, Jack.
My name's Jack Squires, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Jack.
And I want to welcome everyone that's here, and thank you for coming. And I hope I can give you some experience, strength, and hope that I found in these rooms. I was one of these people that didn't think I was an alcoholic for a long time, and I just want to let you know that thank God for, you know, the people in these rooms. And When I was 12 years old, we found a bottle of Old Crow over at El Camino School in the hedges. They used to have hedges up there, and these guys that we sat around, and that was the first time I ever drank, and I drank the whole bottle, and these guys just kept on acting like they were drinking it, and I almost died that day. You know, I got alcohol poisoning. They dragged me all around and everything, and they were afraid to take me home to my dad because they figured my dad would kick their ass. Along with mine. But the reason I bring that up is his name is Clyde Hernandez, and his son's in these rooms now, you know, Jeremiah. And every time I see him, all I think of is, you know, thank God, you know, his dad was there to, you know, walk me around until, you know, he could bring me home and that. But at that time, you know, I told myself, oh, I'm never going to get drunk again, you know, and stuff like that. So all through high school, I was a guy that would have the two beers, and that's all I would have. My senior year, I can tell you exactly how many beers I had. I had one when we lost our CIF championship, and then I was thinking, well, what do we have to celebrate? I thought we drank, you know, to celebrate. And I used to, you know, be one of these guys, you know, my real name's John, so I thought I was John Travolta, you know, and I can get down if you really want me to, but, you know, I get down there really, you know. Yeah. But anyways, now I'm old, so I probably pulled a muscle in my back or something like that, yeah. But anyways, so what I did to occupy myself so I didn't drink that much is I played sports. You know, I played football, I wrestled, I ran track, and I played baseball. So what ended up happening is I hung around with people that, you know, still drank quite a bit. One of my best friends, Albert Lopez, he's looking for a heart transplant, and he ended up, you know, drinking a little too much, and because of that, you know, and he did, you know, other things, you know, like most of us. But the thing is when my drinking started was when I got out of high school. Here's another thing, too, is I was always the guy that got caught. I went to summer school. In high school, I was the vice president of school my junior year. I was the president of school my senior. You know, this guy that thought he was popular and everything, you know, and people just talking about you. And like my wife that I have right now, she knew me in high school and couldn't stand me. You know, I'm not kidding you. But I must have changed, and it was all because of you guys. I was a couple years sober when I met her. But anyways, what ended up happening was I ended up, when I got out of high school, I just, I went to Hancock and all, I wrestled, and after that, then you start having spare time. And when you're bored, what do? You end up hanging out with your friends, and we used to end up taking off the tip of scale all the time, because I knew cops in these towns. And one was, he was a prankster, Mr. Hicks. And he would pull me over. Say I was out on a date with some girl, taking her to the movies. He would pull me over, saying, "Yeah, I think this guy has, you know, a warrant out for his arrest." Handcuff me, put me in the back seat with the girl, you know, in the car. And then that girl usually never went out with me again. And he did that like at least 3 or 4 times, you know. So one thing is, I ended up, when I did get drunk, you know, I would end up getting really drunk, you know, when I ended up, after high school and that, when I ended up going to Hancock. So I remember one time I ended up, I got drunk, and my buddy lived up in Davis and that with his girlfriend. And he says, "Hey, you know, things aren't going good in Santa Maria." Because we always want to blame it on the place we live, you know. If you grew up in Santa Maria, you'd drink too. There's nothing else to do except, you know, sit around barbecue and get drunk, you know. Unless you were playing sports, then that kept me out of it, you know. But after high school, like I said, you know, I was just after wrestling season, it was on for about, you know, 7-8 months. But I ended up, I drove up there drunk and everything, ended up, I'm laying on his floor and everything, and I started thinking, you know what, I better get back, they're going to fire me from my job. I worked for Scoleri, so I drove back, and, you know, in those days, they just had regular phones. He calls me up, you know, later on that day, and he said, "Jack, where are you?" I said, "Man, I can't get fired from my job," you know, so I ended up, I kept that job. But one thing that I used to do a lot of times, too, when there'd be parties around here is I always liked Vegas, you know. So if I got drunk and you guys were with me, we'd get in the car and I'd just start taking off and I'd end up in Vegas. So I probably, between, say, a 3-year period, I was probably in Vegas probably about 30, 40 times. And gas was cheap back in the 70s, so I'd always have a 20 in my back pocket. So I'd make it back, you know. And I ended up, you know, I've told people this story quite a few times, but when I knew I had a drinking problem was when I ended up, I'm over here at Pepper Tree Plaza behind there at a party and everything, and I talked a couple of my buddies into going to Vegas with me, and next thing I know, I wake up and I'm in a parking lot and I'm thinking, I thought, you know, Doug came with me and everything and he wasn't around. And then through my mind, I was thinking, yeah, I think we went to Vegas and I think he ended up, you know, getting on a bus and going home. So I walked into this place and I asked these people, I said, you know, I've been traveling a little. I'm just wondering where I'm at. And they go, well, you're in Omaha, Nebraska. And then I says, well, you know, and I says, and I was wondering what day it was. He goes, well, it's Tuesday morning. So that means from Saturday night to Tuesday morning, I don't know, you know, how I got there, you know, or anything like that. So from that point on, I was thinking, you know what, I got a drinking problem. I better, you know, be able to, you know, handle this. So what I ended up doing, because I figured, you know, it had already been a couple of days, guaranteed I was fired from my job. Because another thing, when I used to get drunk a lot of times, I'd call in sick when I was, you know, in Vegas. They're hearing ting, 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 you know. Yeah, I'm calling in sick again. And one time they told me, you better get your ass back here or we're going to fire you. Because I never wanted to be fired, you know. But I knew I was going to end up losing my job. So I went to Minnesota, you know, and I was 20 years old then, you know. Because my buddy says, well, his dad will get me a job there. So I get there and he goes, no, there isn't any construction jobs. And I was like, well, I've been in the grocery business. So I went around and I found a job there. And to tell you about how there is a God and everything, okay, I had a little Honda car. And 2 weeks before I had taken off to Vegas, I broke down about maybe 30 miles out of town. And I had to have someone tow me back. Okay, so you already know the vehicle ain't running too good. But 2 weeks later when I get drunk, well, I end up, you know, in Omaha, Nebraska. So, you know, I figured it was closer going that way than this way. So I ended up, I stayed there. And the second day I was there, the engine froze up. So I was thinking, man, you know, God must have been with me. Because I used to go to church, but I used to go to one of these churches in Napomo where they scared the hell out of you. They'd shake you and everything, put hands on you, scream and yell. So I was petrified of God, you know. I knew I was going to hell because I'd done too many things wrong, you know. Because another thing is, you know, I used to always wear, you know, not real nice jackets because I would get drunk in town and I would end up at a girl's house and I'd always take off my jacket and I'd always leave it there. And I'd be thinking, shit, which block were they on? I knew about what area of town. So I'd drive around and I'd be thinking, well, I can't find it. Well, there's another jacket I lost. And I lost probably about 5 or 6 jackets that way, you know. But, you know, like I said, the thing is, when you're bored, you need to do something, you know. And the thing is, I figured, well, I better find a wife that, you know, can end up controlling me. So I married this nice Christian girl and everything when I was 23, and she saved my life and everything too. And down when I ended up right before I got sober and that, but I got to tell you one last thing. Okay, the first time I ended up going to an AA meeting was when I was 20 years old. I went to a party in Napomo. You know, it was an all-night party. You know, we used to have bonfires and that. So I go to this party and everything, and I was like, shit, I told Charlie Castillo, that's Red's uncle, that I was going to end up taking him to jail because he was supposed to go to jail in Santa Barbara. So I said, oh, shit, so I got to go. So I'm on the frontage road, and I'm hauling ass, and then I get on the freeway, and all of a sudden the highway patrol pulls me over. And he goes, you know, you were going faster on the frontage road than I was going on the freeway. He says, but I couldn't clock you, you know, or anything, so I'm not going to give you a ticket, but you better slow down. So I said, okay. So then I went and picked up Charlie. You know, I'm still a little hungover, and he says, hey, you know, you look like you need a beer or two. So he buys a case of beer, you know, for us to go down to jail because he's going to be down there a couple weeks. So we put that, you know, in the back seat, and we start drinking. Well, I get down to the jail, and we're sitting there drinking and that, and all of a sudden a couple of sheriffs come up, and he says, what are you guys doing? He said, oh, we're just having a couple beers. He's got to go in the jail, and he says, do you want to go in with them? And I go, no. So he says, okay, I want you to put that beer in your trunk. I said, okay. So I was thinking, well, okay. So I took San Marcos Pass back, and all of a sudden it was a nice day. I was thinking, you know, I should have a beer or two, you know. So I went and grabbed a couple beers, and I'm coming back from Orkin, and I got pulled over for the third time, or messed with cops for the third time, a highway patrol. And he goes, man, you look like you're plastered. And he ran everything. He says, well, you haven't had any tickets, so I'm going to make a deal with you. I'm not going to give you this ticket, but you're going to have to go talk to the district attorney and ask him if, you know, you can end up getting off, but you got to go to 5 meetings. And I want it signed, and I want to see that. So I went, and I go into the district attorney, and I says, I need to go to 5 AA meetings. And he's looking at me, what court sent you here? And I said, no court sent me here. but I need to go to five AA meetings. And I didn't want to tell him, well, to save my butt on a ticket. And then I told him, well, this one guy says, you know, if I go to five AA meetings, he'll tear up a ticket. Well, he let me do that. So I went to the five meetings, and I heard all these people's story, how their life was all messed up. And I was thinking, you know what? If I'm ever as bad as they are, maybe I'll go to one of those meetings again. So I went to the five meetings because I thought for sure they'd check those out. So what ended up happening then, what I'm getting at is then I married a good lady and everything where I didn't drink that much, you know. But the only problem is once or twice when my friends came and visited me, you know, I ended up drinking way too much in that. So then my wife didn't like that. So next thing you know, I got divorced. So then I got another marriage and ended up it got worse, you know. She was a person that drank too. And then to get to the third wife, I ended up, that wife divorced me after, each marriage has lasted less than 5 years, okay. So then, so I get to the third marriage and everything, and I marry someone when I end up going to a wedding. I went to my buddy's wedding, and I was in the wedding in up in Oakland, and she was only 19 years old, and I was 34, but the thing is, I ended up telling myself, you know what, I think this was a dream, and I wake up, and I ask her, did we get married, and she goes, yeah, and I was like, well, okay, so we tried that out and everything, but that didn't work. And the thing is I started seeing how drinking was really bad and everything. Things started going south. And I married someone that was worse than I was. You know, we did a little drugs and stuff like that too. And I figured we're going to quit doing this stuff. So we moved over to Nevada. And we're working over there and we're just drinking beer now. Because, you know, we can handle that. But what I'm getting at is, so then she ended up showing me how I used to be, how I must have treated my first wife and everything. So then I ended up, while I was over there, I tried to go to AA a couple times, you know, in 93. And then I ended up, I caught her with someone and I got my third drunk driving, you know, and I knew that, you know, things were going south. So that's how I ended up telling you that, you know, guaranteed I know I'm an alcoholic. I knew every time that I drank that bad things happened. Drinking was the thing that I thought was going to end up helping, you know, making my life better, and it didn't. So I came over here to end up being with my family and that, and started going to AA and that, but I never worked these steps. I got a sponsor like a lot of us do, and I never utilized my sponsor. So then I ended up... I get a little bit of time and I go back out, you know. I got like a year and a half one time, and next thing I know, you know, I went back out because, and then I ended up making the mistake of starting to drink near beer, you know. Came to meetings and I just have a near beer, and near beer ends up being real beer down the road. I went out water skiing, the guy hits me in the face with my ski, and next thing I know, you know, I started drinking again. But what ended up happening that brought me in here is I got mad at an employee. I worked for Scleri's now. I got mad at an employee, and I ended up what actually happened? His wife was cheating on him all the time, and we both worked night crew in San Luis. And he kept on wanting to leave in the middle of the night, pick up his wife, to end up taking her, you know, back to Tascadero. I said, you got to just get rid of her. She's screwing around on you. And he wouldn't go, so we got in a fight, and I ended up getting fired from my job. But then what I ended up doing is I sat in my apartment for a month and a half thinking, what am I going to do with my life? And I had been to AA before. I had a big book that, you know, looked like this that was probably about 5 or 6 years old, but when you never open it up and use it, you know, looks like that. But then this is my second book. When you've used a little... You know, it looks like it's been used, you know. But at that point in my life, for a month and a half, I decided what I really want to do. And then I remember going to meetings and stuff like that. And the thing about the meetings is I heard people laughing at. I heard people end up, you know, telling me that, you know, one day at a time that, you know, they started, their life started getting a little bit better. You know, they told me even when it was shitty, at least it didn't get any worse. You know, and I started looking at those things, and that's all I wanted. I have three chips that I keep with me that are in my car right now. It's my 30 day. I don't want to ever end up having that 30 days again, because all those 30 days, all I wanted to do is drink, because I was so ashamed of what I had done in my life. You know, I had three sets of kids at that time too. You know, I had a son with my first, a son with my second, and a son and a daughter with my third marriage. And I was the type of parent that, you know, would end up telling my kids, you know, get me another beer. My oldest son, you know, he was 14 when I quit drinking, but when he was 12 and 13, he remembers the times that, you know, I was telling him, hey, Dad needs another beer, you know. But when I ended up first getting sober in that too, I was one of these guys, because I had been in and out of the rooms, like a lot of us that feel that, you know, we're ashamed and, you know, they're going to be saying things about you. We don't shoot our wounded here. The most important thing, honestly, is we're just happy that you made it back, you know. But what I ended up doing is I got a sponsor up in Paso, and he was a retired guy, and he spent a lot of time with me. And if you're new, the most important thing about a sponsor is he's a trusted friend. This is what he ended up telling me, too. He says, we're going to end up going through each step one month at a time. He says, so you can absorb it. He says, too many people, they get in here, they get well, next thing you know, they're gone. You know, because they get that pink cloud after a month or two. Well, that pink cloud didn't come for quite a while for me. But each time I ended up doing those steps, I could feel that onion, you know, just being cut a little bit more and a little more gratitude for, you know, I don't have to go back and live that type of lifestyle. I go to a lot of speaker meetings and that, and the people would always end up giving me hope, you know, tell me that, you know what, if you do the right indicated things, sooner or later, right things will end up happening in your life. And the thing is, the job that I ended up getting fired from, 5 months later, I kept on going to those people, telling them, hey, no one will hire me, you know. And I was thinking, well, why should they? Because my first sponsor, for the first month that he sponsored me, he says, for the first month, if you do go out and apply for a job, he says, you have to tell people you have a tendency of hitting people. And I said, what are you talking about? He says, you do have a tendency of hitting people, don't you? And I go, yeah. And he says, well, you don't lie anymore. He says, you're honest. That's one of the most important things in Alcoholics Anonymous. You've got to be honest. And he says another thing, too, that really stuck with me is, for that first month anyways, it's a full-time job, just stay sober. He says, too many people are bitching and complaining about their children and stuff like that. Just pray to God and say, God, will you watch my children for me? You know, and he did that for me, you know. And I'd get my kids together and we'd go to the park and stuff like that. A lot of times people think you got to take them to an amusement park. I'd just take them over to, you know, the local park and that, and push them on the swings and stuff like that and see them play together. Because when you have three sets of kids, you know, they have different parents, and when they get together, they get united. And all three of my one boy, he seems to stay away from the others quite a bit. But all the kids, you know, care about each other and that. And they ended up growing up. And I kept on telling them, I need you guys more than you need me right now. I says, Dad is one of these guys, when he drinks, he ends up doing things that aren't right. And I'm an alcoholic. And you're going to hear people end up talking about alcoholics in these meetings and stuff like that I take you to. Because I used to drag them to the meetings when I had them and stuff like that for an hour and tell them afterwards, you know, I'll take you out for an ice cream or something like that. But one thing, too, is when I first came in here, I ended up having I got sober in February, and in December, my two youngest kids ended up at my doorstep, you know, so I was about 9 months sober at the time, you know, and I called up my sponsor and asked him what I should do, and I was scared and everything, and he says, your life's unmanageable. But that second step, what did you end up doing? You ended up, you know, wanting, you know, that higher power and that. And he says, in that third step, didn't you end up giving it to God? And didn't I tell you that, you know, as long as you wanted to stay sober, don't take it back? And I haven't taken it back, you know. So what I ended up doing is saying, God, you know, I don't know what to do with these kids, but I want them in my life. Will you help me out? Because what ended up happening, when I got my job back, first of all, I was living, I lived on my parents' couch for a little while. But I ended up, they sent me down to Santa Barbara and they made me part-time. So I'm working part-time 20-some hours a week. And at the same time, because I'm an idiot and been married three times, I had three child support payments. You know, I paid one on the first and two on the 15th. And I don't know how I paid them and everything, but God kept on providing. You know, that's why I tell you, you know, because of my drinking and because of all the bad things I did, I kept on thinking, I don't deserve this, God, you know. Why you end up helping me out? But I found out the people in these rooms would end up, you know, when I'd bring my kids at times, some of the women would take my kids outside for me, you know, because they're 3 and 5 years old and they do make a little noise at times, you know. And then God ended up putting another man in my life, Randy, that goes to NA a lot. And he has a son and daughter to the same age as my son and daughter. And he's a single parent just like I am. And he says, you know what? My kids are driving me crazy. He says, you know what? He says, let's make a pact. He says, when my kids are out of line, you chew them out. And when your kids are out of line, I'll chew your kids out. And when Randy would say something, my kids, they just, you know, freeze like, what's this guy that I don't know telling me things? And I said, you better listen to him. This guy's crazy, you know. So then you could already figure out, you know. And Randy and I have been really close in that. And then the thing that really helped my sobriety a lot, too, is playing softball. You know, you had to stay sober to be on a sober baseball team and everything. And we'd end up going on the weekends, and I'd, you know, bring the kids once in a while. But, you know, it just ended up being a lot of fun. And because you have to occupy yourself with something different. You know, I always look at the book when we're talking on, that sufficient substitute. That sufficient substitute, when they talk about the fellowship, isn't just going to AA meetings. It's doing functions and doing things with other members of Alcoholics Anonymous too. Like going to the lake and not getting bombed and, you know, almost drowning in the water of maybe 3 or 4 feet because you fell back, you know, backwards and, you know, and stuff like that. But instead, you know, you're in there just playing with your kids. And one thing that was nice between all my wives is I always kept my boat. I got a boat when I met my first wife. And I have my dresser. I had a dresser that I really liked, and that was one thing that I'm not losing my dresser. You know, I still got my dresser, and I still do with my fourth wife. You know, so that dresser's made it through everything, and all my important papers are in there. There's no money, so don't come and steal it. Okay, no, but anyway, so but the thing is. I started thinking, you know, earlier about, you know, the steps and how they ended up changing my life. And what it was is every time I had a problem with my kids, I would end up going back to the steps and I would be thinking, God, what can I do, you know? And a lot of times the best thing I could do is just, you know, go and talk to another alcoholic. That's why you have a sponsor too. And it's not just your sponsor. It could be, you know, other trusted friends. You know, that have been through the same thing. And that's what has always helped me. I can remember Smokey one time. I felt like drinking again because I'm not one of these guys that just, boom, and then I felt I'm never going to drink again. It didn't work for me that way. But I remember going and talking to Smokey and telling him, you know, I applied for this one job in January, you know, with... the bread company, and it was like March, right after my birthday, and I was like, man, they should be calling me by now, you know. The only thing that was bad is when I went down for the interview, they told me, you know, it was for oral week, they said, we don't hire people who have drunk drivers, you know. And I was like, well, why did you end up having me come down and interview? But the thing is I felt like drinking then, too, and that was about 2.5 years into sobriety. And my sponsor, my first sponsor, had passed away and everything too. And the thing that I loved about my first sponsor, and this is why, you know, I can't say no to anyone, is my first sponsor, he's going to be passing away in a day or two. He's in the hospital. He said, "Hey, Jack," he said, "I just don't want to die in the hospital. Can you get me out?" So I got him out, and we sat down, and we had a good time and everything. And he says, "How are the kids doing?" And I said, "Man, the kids are doing great." And he was like my second dad and everything, you know. And because we get relationships and friendships like that in AA. People that we can trust no matter what, that aren't going to end up when you give them a phone call, and then they don't even know that you even called. You know, those are the type of alcoholic friends I used to have. But so then after he passed away, you know, I almost drank. You know, I was, like I said, I was working down in Santa Barbara part-time in a grocery store, and I started driving back, and I stopped in Buellton, and it was a nice hot day, and I got the 12-pack of beer, and I put it up on the counter, and I started shaking. And I told myself, you know, if I drink, I'm telling my God he doesn't work. And if my God doesn't work, what am I going to rely on? Because I always was told there's going to be some time when no human power is going to relieve that alcoholism. It's going to have to come from that higher power. And from that point on, I knew God was going to be by my side no matter what. So what I ended up doing is I put that 12-pack away, and I went down in the Solvang, and I said, "Man, I need an AA meeting." You know, I'm just walking. I know they have AA meetings around here somewhere. Do you know where they're AA meeting? And they're thinking, "Man, this guy's nuts." And they says, "Where?" I think it's like Firth Street or something like that. I went back there and I got in this meeting. There's only like four or five people, and there's this one guy who's in there like this, shaking and everything. He says, "My wife just left me. I just lost my job," and I'm looking at that guy and I says, "You know what? Everything's gonna be okay." I told him, "You know, I was the same way as you were 2 years ago." I said, "I might only have a part-time job right now. I might not, you know, have everything I need." I says, "But, you know, one thing I do have is I have members of Alcoholics Anonymous that are going to help me." And I says, "And I'll help you too." I said, "I don't have any money, but I have, you know, I have an ear that, you know, listen to what you have to say." And that I ended up leaving, and from that point on, I knew God was going to always be on my side. So then ended up, you know, I almost drank, and that was, you know, in April. Well, the week before, or actually about 3 weeks before 4th of July, the people down south end up giving me a phone call. They say, "Hey, Jack, you know what? This is Oral Wheat. We've been hearing some good things about you. We're going to end up giving you a chance." And in my head, I was thinking, oh, they don't hire alcoholics. They don't hire people that have drunk drivings. But they're going to end up hiring me. And I says, there's another God shot. When people tell you that things can't be done, that's bullshit. Anything is possible in Alcoholics Anonymous. Anything. And then, you know, here's another thing too, is you get the job and everything, you know. They're hiring me in Santa Maria, and I'm thinking, man, everything's great, you know. So then all of a sudden they say, you got to go back down to Santa Barbara. They need you to work down there. So then I'm working down there, and I'm all a little frustrated. But one thing that's cool is they had a softball tournament. So I got off work down there, ended up, you know, the next day I got off early, and we had a weekend tournament. So I was already down there to play softball and everything, you know. And like I said, you know, softball has saved my life, you know. Well, I don't know what's going to keep you here, but I know, you know, a lot of these members, I know these steps, you know, for me. And another thing is my sponsor Leo talks about the traditions. These traditions are just as important, if not more important, than these are for me nowadays. Because even though these are keeping me sober, these are teaching me how to end up living with you guys. And how to treat the other. When a person comes in and sharing for 3 minutes and they're driving me nuts, and I'm thinking, you know, I don't want to hear your shit, you know. And I'm thinking, well, people used to end up saying that about me all the time, guaranteed. And Mr. Jim back there, R, would always say, love and tolerance. I could always remember when I came in, you got to have love and tolerance. They have their 3 to 5 minutes. Let them share whatever's on their mind. Because that might be keeping them sober. We don't know what's keeping them sober at first. So don't badmouth someone. The best thing to do is after the meeting, go, hey, you know what? When you're sharing, you know, we try to end up sharing what's keeping us sober. Rather than, we don't just want to hear the mess all the time. You're going to talk about the mess a little, but, you know, dig in a little about, but I look at step one. I know my life's unmanageable, you know. But the thing is, you know, there's a power that's going to restore me. And at first, it's, you know, the people in these rooms. Because, like, I had that punishing God where they'd shake you around and all that kind of stuff. And, man, you know, I used to be the guy that slept and I'd have the sheets over me and stuff like that. I'm scared of heights already. You know, and stuff like that, you know, but I'm getting over that fear. What I do is I started ziplining. My wife had me ziplining. She ended up this year, I went and jumped off the stratosphere, you know. I'm up there and my hands are like this and the girl's literally going like that, taking my fingers off. And I'm thinking, I paid $120, but I don't want to die. I ain't jumping. And they're just laughing at me. People, and all of a sudden, so I got my hand over there, and she says, what do? She goes, well, you go when you want, and I just went. Oh. Well, that's what we do in AA, too. When your back is against the wall and you think nothing is going right, what do? We just let go and say, well, you guys have me. You know, I had no better place to go when I ended up coming to these rooms. I didn't have a job. My ex-wives, two of them have the restraining orders. One has it where I have to have someone from the courts watching me. Because, you know, when I ended up applying for that job too, you know, for Oralee, the supervisor, I asked him, I says, well, I've actually had 3 drunk drive-ins. Do I have to put all those down? And he said, they'll never hire you then. He says, when's the last drunk drive-in? I said, well, in 93. He said, the one before that was in 84. And they said, oh, you don't have to worry about that one. Just tell them about the ones on your record. The thing is, we talk about telling the truth, but you don't have to blab the whole truth. You just have to blab what they're asking you. How many drunk drive-ins do you have on your record? I have 1. How many have you had? Oh, I've had 3. Yeah, we ain't hiring you. So I told them I had 1. So, you know, they gave me a job. But the thing is, because I was sober and everything, my 2 youngest kids, I ended up, I said, I want to always be, I want to be to my children what AA is to me. When they ask for something, if I can do, I try to help them. A lot of times people ask you to, you know, for things in AA and you're not going to end up doing it for them because you have other commitments or plans. But you might end up, you know, guiding them to, you know, someone that might end up helping. And the same thing with sponsorship too. A lot of times we'll be booked up with way too many people that, you know, we're sponsoring or certain days, but you know someone that, you know, you could suggest to them. You know, here's a trusted friend to talk to, you know, and everything. You know, you guys might click or something. You have something in common with that person, you know. You've been in jail a lot. No, I'm just kidding. But what I'm getting at is we look at the similarities and quit looking at the differences. When I first came in here, you know, when I was 20 years old, you know, I never really got in trouble too much because I always got caught. Like, I cut class 1 time in high school and I got caught. The only time I ever cut class, I got caught. You know, I'm that type of guy. You know, I give a guy a ride home and I get a drunk driving, you know. You know, we have a barbecue. We only had a 6-pack of beer. 3 beers, no one's drunk. But when they said your blood alcohol is 0.08, you know, and it's on the thing, yeah, that's a drunk driving. Okay. So what I'm getting at is we used to always end up switching things the opposite way. Or that's what I would do all the time. You know, I wasn't an alcoholic because I didn't get drunk every single time I drank. But by the end of my drinking, shit, I drank all the time. You know, if you're married to the wife that I married, if you're an idiot like me and married someone 19 and you're 34, someone should have shot me, really, you know. But you know, that here's the whole thing about that, too, is when I was 5 years sober, my ex-wife calls me up and stuff like that, you know, and she lives in Rio Grande. She wants to, you know, see the kids. Another thing, too, is I got custody of my 2 youngest kids, too. So But my thing is, you can come see the kids anytime you want. I just ask that maybe you're not high. And if you are high, I'm not going to end up, you know, doing the court thing on you like you did me. No, she did that to me. But anyways, I'm going to let her see the kids because the kids should be part of their life. Well, what ended up happening is I'm 5 years sober. I'm at a meeting at Nelson and that, and she goes, Jack, you know, I'm pissed off at how good your life's gotten. And I'm thinking, oh, that's good. I used to be pissed off when you didn't come home for days, you know, and shit like that, and I had the kids. But I did the same thing to my first wife. So there is a God, and there is justice, and there's karma and all that kind of stuff. So what I ended up doing is I said, you know what? We're too close. I can't really get you sober and stuff like that. I said, why don't you go live with your parents? So she went and lived with her parents, and she started going to AA meetings. She was sober for 10 years. But what's the first thing that you hear all the time? She quit going to meetings, so what happened? She got drunk again. And now she's tried to come back a couple of times. You know, my children that were 3 and 5 are 23 and 25, and they talk to their mom. And I says, one thing that we don't do is we don't throw something down people's throat and end up giving them a bad time. And I just want you to end up... my daughter, she's one that can end up writing things. She wrote something today, beyond grateful to have a father who loves and supports me even when I find myself in tough spots. He looks beyond my poor decisions even when he forewarns me, and instead of telling me I told you so, he allows me to experience life even when he knows it's better that I know myself the disappointment I may find myself facing in the end. See, because that's one thing about Alcoholics Anonymous too, is that a lot of times we know that you may be doing the wrong thing, but we're not going to end up telling you, well, you screwed up, we don't want any part of you. I hope you learn from your mistakes and you don't have to keep on doing them over and over again. I hope if you're less than 40 years old, I came in when I was first 20 years old, and I told myself, honestly, if I am ever as bad as them, maybe I'll start going to AA. And then a couple times the court sent me here, but I never worked the steps, and I could never grasp what Alcoholics Anonymous was about. We have all these people, you know, that Stan talks about, that are bench warmers, you know, that are watching, looking at us, and wondering how in the world we're going to end up doing this. This is, you're in the game now, you know. You get to end up going that 49er game and you feel part of, rather than the guy running back and forth not watching the game, you're part of the game. Well, that's what Alcoholics Anonymous is about too. You're part of the game now, you know. You've got people around here that they're not looking at you, condemning you. They're trying to lift you up. They're trying to help you. Because someone did it for me no matter what. When someone asks me to sponsor them, I never say no. I can't say no. What I'll do is I'll be your temporary sponsor until we can find you, you know, someone that can sponsor you if I have too many people. But at the same time, I'm going to end up telling you what Leo tells me. Because another thing, too, is that there's a lot of things I don't know about keeping people sober and stuff like that. Just my own experience. But when I can use Darren's or Leo's or Mike's or Tom's, you know, experiences, Billy's, you know, even Jim R's. No, you know... I can end up, you know, helping the other one, because we're one big happy family, you know. We sit, everyone has different faults in that, but at the same time, everyone has a good thing. God didn't create people, you know, that were just a piece of shit. He let us end up, you know, going out and finding what we really want in life. And we thought we could find it in the bottle. Instead, we found it in Alcoholics Anonymous. Because when I go on vacation, I found out my best vacations are usually when I go to quite a few AA meetings. And I've shared quite a few times. When I go to, as soon as I get to a place, like if I go to Tahoe, I already know the places to go. If I go to Vegas, I already know places to go, AA meetings. Because I want to find out what's cheap and what doesn't cost a lot of money to have fun. Because why should we blow a bunch of money like when we used to drink and maybe do a little drugs, you know. But we won't talk about that. But, you know, just drinking and stuff like that. Just like if, how many times would you go to a bar, you're trying to impress people, and next thing they say, well, you're buying the round and it's $70. And I'm thinking, holy shit, how many people are my friends? Oh, all these people over here said you're buying. And I've had that happen to me way too many times, you know. But just like the most important thing in Alcoholics Anonymous is that you keep on coming back. The most important thing in Alcoholics Anonymous is that we're not going to give up on you. We're not going to condemn you. We're going to end up welcoming you back and ask that maybe you try these steps. Because you are not going to feel, you're not going to feel the electricity. You know how my life is just, I pinch myself and say, God, why did you give me this life? He said, because you started treating people good. He said, why do my children love me? Because I don't condemn them and I don't tell them, I told you so. How many times did your dad end up telling you, I told you you were going to get in trouble? Shit, I knew I was in trouble. You know, we don't need to be, I told you so. We need to be saying, was your way working? Maybe try ours. And when you start trying ours, you'll find that our way is a lot better way. The easier, softer way is in Alcoholics Anonymous. You might not feel it in your body and everything at first, but the really feeling is that, you know, when these steps start working in your life and people start doing good things for you. You know why I bring, you know, sweets and bread and stuff like that? Because when I didn't have a job in that, instead of going, I was real close to the dumpster diving, but because I had worked for Scleri's in Paso, I would go there and the broken eggs, because there'd be a cart with some broken eggs, they'd give me the eggs. And then the produce guys, I knew them, you know, because I'd worked there, you know, and they'd give me, you know, that. And I started making some killer omelets, man. My sponsor, that was another thing, is my first sponsor gave me a key to his house. He said, anytime you feel like drinking, come on over, Jack. I was like, well, I don't have a job. Well, 10 o'clock at night, I felt like drinking, you know, 2 o'clock in the morning, I felt like drinking. So I'd come over all the time, and I started sleeping on his couch. And he said, Jack, you're coming over so much that you're going to have to start making breakfast all the time. So I'd go and get, you know, these things that they're ready to throw in the dumpster. Well, the bread that I bring to meetings and that, they're that close to the dumpster. You guys don't realize that. I made a deal with my boss and everything. I says, you know, some of this food goes to the food bank. I said, but the food bank only takes so much. Then it goes to a pig farmer. I says, you know what? I'd rather feed people in Alcoholics Anonymous before I feed the pigs. You know, they should be getting our hand-me-downs, not, you know. So when there's, and we overbake and everything, you know. This country and everything, we take for granted. We overdo everything rather than just being happy where we're at. And I'm going to end with this is, another thing that I always found out too in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I don't think about this that much, but I thought about it today, is my first sponsor would always say, try to find that quiet place. And you know where that quiet place for me is in the room of Alcoholics Anonymous. And knowing that God has taken care of my children, has given me that intuitive thought to end up treating people the way they should be treated, not the way that I think I should treat them. My thing is to pause when I'm agitated. I get agitated at work all the time. Instead of saying something to someone right away, I sit back and think, what's the loving and kind way? How would my God treat, you know, someone? My God has forgiven me for all the shit that I did and the way I used to treat people. Can I be a better Jack today? And can I be a better Jack even tomorrow? You know, so progress, not perfection. You know, I always heard that in these rooms too. So if you slip, come back. We're not going to end up shooting you. We're going to end up, you know, because what I'm getting at is we don't shoot our wounded. Instead, we're going to end up saying, I'm happy you made it back. Because there's too many people. We all know when we're driving down the street, we see people that we used to know in these rooms. And you look at them and you can't see anything there because they're just thinking there's no hope anymore. If they make it back in this room, there's chance for hope. And with that hope grows, you know, a new life. You know, so that's enough out of me, and thank you for letting me share. Good job.